Episode 929, My Strength is My Story with Edie Sunby, the Mission Walker.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day. It is My Strength is My Story series, and we have an extraordinary woman with us. Her name is Edie Sunby. Prepare to have God meet you where you are right now. It's going to be absolutely incredible. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, welcome to this incredible family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com, where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. When you listen to this episode, we get real with what goes on in life. This woman was diagnosed with stage 4 gallbladder cancer, and she's still here today talking about it. It's an incredible story, God working through her life. There is no way that you're going to be sitting there going, I can't do what I want to do in this world, because Edie's going to bring it back to life. She's going to bring the adventure, the love, the trust, the faith, all with the ring of the bell. Without further ado, let's ring in Edie Sunby, the Mission Walker. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now, My Strength is My Story series. Today we have on an extraordinary, an exceptional woman. I cannot wait for you to meet her. Her name is Edie Littlefield Sunby. She is a woman on a mission. She's a wife to Dale of 42 years, a mother of 2 beautiful daughters, and 2 other daughters who were gifted to them when her brother passed away. Edie and her husband were making tracks to start their business when she became very, very ill. Edie was diagnosed with stage 4 gallbladder cancer with only a 0.9% chance of survival. Edie had plans to live out her life a different way. A true fighter and a spirited woman, nothing, not even cancer, could hold her back. What rang true in her life were the bells of El Camino Real Mission Trail. In her brand new book, The Mission Walker, and oh, you all are going to want to pick up your own copy, Edie opens up about how God provided the way through cancer and the strength to escape from fear and ring each and every day in with a new grand adventure. Edie, I am so honored to have you here, my friend and sister in Christ. Welcome.
Thank you, Christiane.
Oh, it is such an awesome honor to have you here. I read your book. Obviously, you can tell by the marked up pages. It isn't out during this recording. It's not even out on the shelf. So I was lucky to get an advanced copy to read. Your story is incredible.
Thank you.
It is. And it's a beautiful story. I mean, everybody has a story. And that's one thing I love about this series, My Strength is My Story. And here you get to tell your story. So before we jump in and we go back a few years in time, I want you to tell us a little bit about what keeps Edie hopping right now.
Just right now?
Just right now.
Walking. Actually, what I did first thing this morning, Christiane, at sunrise, I walked in the canyons outside of San Diego. Actually, it's Torrey Pines Canyon is the area. Yeah, at sunrise, I try to do that every morning. But I have a reason for that, and that is I have one lung because I lost one lung with cancer, and it keeps me my lungs inflated. But more than anything else, it keeps my spirit inflated.
Oh, that is beautiful. Your spirit inflated. If people could just go around with that aspect and that picture in their mind, Edie, can you imagine what their life and how different it would be?
You know, it's interesting because I think when we're outside, we sense it. We feel it so strongly.
Yes.
And especially when you're in the wilderness, like in a canyon. And I have this point in the canyon where I stop every morning. And I just open my heart to God and I say, astonish me, astonish me. And he never fails to deliver. Every single morning, I am astonished by the wonder of it, actually. I'm actually overwhelmed with wonder.
Oh, that is, that's incredible. Now, nobody knows a story yet like I do in your brand new book, and we're going to get into that. But for you to sit here and tell me right now, astonish me, you have been astonished. Every day has been more than a great adventure, I would say. Take us back to when it all started and you became really, really ill.
Okay, yeah, every day is a bonus day. Mm. And it all started one day in 2007 when a doctor, a stranger, because I hadn't been to a doctor in 20 years since the birth of my children, a total stranger told me, and my family's all gone, you know, children away at college, my husband's working overseas on a business, mm-hmm. and so I'm by myself. But it couldn't wait. So the doctor, whose physician's assistant had started doing some tests and did more tests and more tests and more tests. And about 3 days of intensive testing and me getting more nervous all the time, he called me into his office. And like I said, he was a stranger. I'd never seen him before. The first thing he said is, "Where's your family?" And I said, "I'm sorry, I'm all alone. They're not here." And he said, "You need to call your family." And he said, I would really like to talk to all of you together. But he said, "What I have to tell you can't wait." And he said, "You're filled with cancer." Well, no, he didn't really say that. He just said, "You have cancer." Oh. And by then, I mean, I'd done an ultrasound, both a pelvic and an abdominal ultrasound. I had done a CT and then another CT and then an MRI. All of this without seeing any doctor, just through a physician's assistant, since I didn't really have a doctor.
Right.
And so I was, you know, the handwriting was on the wall that there was something very serious with me, mm-hmm. even though I really felt pretty darn good. And so when he told me, I was shocked but not surprised.
Mm.
And you can be shocked and not surprised.
Mm-hmm. When you were sitting there, Edie, though, I mean, because it's unfortunate that we all get some kind of bad news in our life. Yours was a little bit more devastating because when he was calling for your family, "Where's your family?" And you were told you had cancer. Where did your mind go right then?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think it's really sometimes easier, Christiane, when you're by yourself.
Mm.
When because you don't process things emotionally, uh-huh. because had my family been there, it would have been just devastating emotionally.
Yeah.
And we probably would have all pretty much been overcome with shock and surprise and grief and negativism, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was all by myself, I processed it a little bit more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I love to walk, by the way. It allows you to process things slowly. Especially when they're coming at you at 1,000 miles an hour.
Yes.
But anyway, the first thing I thought of, not the first thing, I was still stunned, but mm-hmm. the first things I thought of, the most important thing, I reached back in the recesses of my mind and thought, well, what have I heard about cancer? I knew nothing about cancer. The only question I knew to ask that I knew that was really important was, has it spread?
Mm.
Has it spread? Because, you know, a lot of cancers at stage one cancer is pretty much 95-97% curable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to fight through it with surgery, radiation, chemo sometimes, but it's 97% curable. Stage two is most often 87% and greater curable. But I knew enough to know that if it's spread, it's metastatic cancer, it's incurable.
Yeah.
So I said, "Has it spread?" And he said, "Yes." And then he just opened up, and he said that I was filled with cancer, mm. that they had spotted it in many organs in my body, and it looked like the source was gallbladder, and he mentioned that one tumor that they saw appeared to be 17 centimeters. Well, I had no idea what 17 centimeters was, and so I asked them, and he said, "That's about 7 inches." So I sat there and I, in my hands, I put my hands 7 inches apart, mm-hmm. my fingers, and I just sat there stunned and knowing that this was the size of my abdomen, actually from my belly button, you know, this is like my abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tumor that had broken out loose, in addition to tumors in the liver, in addition to the tumors in colon and rectum and other places in my body, and a blackened gallbladder that there was in my peritoneum floating in my abdominal cavity was a 7-inch tumor. All of these things I didn't know at the time. I was just fixated on, and that helped calm me. Anything you can do physically and visualize and get a hold of, and just to quiet
mm-hmm.
the panic.
Mm, visualization to quiet the panic. We all need to take note on that one.
But it took more than that when I left his office, Christiane, because I had to connect with God, because what I was going to go through, I knew that I could not do it by myself. And I remember just kind of in a haze, finding my way to my car, getting out of the parking lot there of the doctor's office, and almost immediately I pulled over to the side of the road because I knew I had to get away. I had to go for a walk. I had to do something. Mm-hmm. So I pulled over, and it's interesting because we have these mission bells along the road here in California that marks the old El Camino Mission Trail, and I had never really noticed them or thought anything of them, actually. You know, they're kind of like invisible to us speeding by in our cars at 80 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour. And so I pulled over, and I was in kind of the shade of this mission bell alongside the road. I could hardly even get over out of the traffic lane, but I was so panicked. So I sat there, and as the sun came through the window, I remember just breathing quietly and just trying to find the peace in between breaths, to find the peace of God, the stillness. And all I could say is, please, Lord, have mercy on me. Mm. And I breathed deeply. And in the silence, that's where I find God. And I found it at that moment. And the sunlight coming through the window, it was so beautiful. And I thought to myself, this is so beautiful. How can I leave this? Dear Heavenly Father, please, please be with me. Have mercy on me. And by the time I got home to the rabbit hole of the internet, figuring out what I was up against, calling my husband, him doing some research, you know, I thought I knew what I was up against, but you never know what you're up against. But if God's with us, we can, if he's there with us, which he always is, we can pretty much deal with anything.
Oh, yes. And speaking of your family, because I'm sitting here thinking that people are probably like, where was your family? You get this news, you're on the side of the road, and you're calling your husband? Your husband wasn't even in the United States at the time.
No, he wasn't. We're entrepreneurs, so we're small business people, and we start small companies. And actually, he had a programming team that was overseas, and he had to work with them. Mm-hmm. And my children were away at college. And I did have one daughter that had taken a gap year from college, and she was here in San Diego, but she was at work. Mm. And, yeah, you know, that's how life is.
But you had God on your side at that immediate moment.
Absolutely. And I knew it. And I knew it. And that really helped with the acceptance. Mm. And now, accepting doesn't mean that you're just going to roll over and just be passive. Not at all. Acceptance means that you deal with it. There are facts on the ground. It is what it is. And there's no time for being, there are times to feel sorry for yourself. There are times to cry. There are times to be angry. There are times for everything, every purpose unto heaven. Mm-hmm. That's what the Bible teaches us, the time and purpose of everything. But at some point you have to get it together and you have to deal with it. And that's when you are with God, the deepest and the strongest and the most connected is when you have to deal with it. Mm. You're not alone ever.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone. And in fact, you grew up, which I found very fascinating in reading your book, which you all will want to pick up your own copy of The Mission Walker. We will have the links in the show notes for you. It is an incredible story of this woman on a mission, and it's a mission that's going to touch your heart, and it's going to go beyond that. I promise you that. So stay tuned, because there is so much more. Edie, you grew up with an amazing family, from what I read, and your mom and dad were very, very near and dear, and this wasn't something you were faced with, this huge, more than huge brick wall, this obstacle, more than Mount Everest in front of you, by yourself, yes, God by your side, and you're sitting here going, I can do this. And you wrote in your book, you said that your mom and dad taught you how to trust God, to be flexible, and to moderate expectations. They taught me to be happy with what I have, to guard against blame, and to refrain from feeling sorry for myself. Wow, what a gift your parents gave you.
You know, I was very lucky because I was raised on a farm in rural Oklahoma, actually a cotton farm. My dad was a cotton farmer. So and he had 12 children, and I was the next to the youngest of 12. And so they were pretty much exhausted. My mother had seven of us. My dad's first wife died, actually, at a very early age. He had five children. Then he married my mother, and they had seven of us. So by the time I came along, the next to the youngest, they were tired. They were pretty exhausted, which was actually a good thing. Because it allowed us the freedom to live as we could live, as we wanted to live, mm-hmm. With a tremendous amount of freedom. They didn't have a lot of expectations. We made our own expectations, which, by the way, our own expectations are always so much greater than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. We don't need any outside pressure. Yeah. In terms of expectations. Heaven knows we have enough of that. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so... I was raised with that large family, and my mother and father were very accepting, because on a farm, especially in a drought-prone Oklahoma, I was raised. It was during the what was called the filthy 50s, during the 1950s, before we even had electricity. So we had no electricity, but there was another drought. There was a huge drought. Everyone knows about the Dust Bowl and the dirty 30s. Well, this was the filthy 50s, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. Droughts are cyclical, and they hit time after time after time. Life is cyclical. It hits, you have your peaks and you have your valleys.
Yes.
And so the question is how do you deal with that? And because I was raised on the land, and the generations of farmers, and my folks had the attitude that you deal with it with acceptance. Mm. And what that means is that daddy would work harder, mm-hmm. and mama would use a little less. Mm. But we always got by. God always provided. And we had such tremendous faith that God would provide. And he does provide.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And he provided in your moment of chaos.
Yes. He was there. The God that I was raised with was there. And I was so, so beholden to my folks for raising me in a wonderful Christian family and teaching me these things. Because when you need it, it's there. And in fact, the first thing I did when I came home to an empty house, mm-hmm. I'd just been told I was dying of cancer. I was filled with cancer. The first thing I did was take down Mother's Bible, her large print Bible. She had died years before. I took down her Bible, and I held it close to me. And I knew that I wasn't holding Mother's Bible close to me. I was holding Mama close to me. Yeah. And that's how I felt peace.
Mm. Mm. There's just something about that. I mean, it gives you it's that blanket of comfort. God provides that, but... when you have that sound foundation that you were gifted as a child, I mean, you had no idea you would be facing this in your adulthood life. And your children were still young. In college, they're still babies.
Yes, yes. You know, we're all babies at heart.
Yes.
You know, we really are. We all, and we have to remember that. We have to love ourselves. I think that's God. We're made in God's image, and God made us for love. Mm-hmm. He made us out of love. And so one of the ones he wants us to love is ourselves. And I found going through cancer, the ravages of cancer, what it's doing to my body, I had to often hug my body. Mm-hmm. I would talk to my body. I would make a pact with my body. I would say, okay, sorry, after chemo or after surgery, I would apologize to my body for having to hurt it. Mm. And I would thank my body for being there for me. You know, God has given us the most wonderful body. It is indeed, my mother always said, your body is the temple of your soul, mm-hmm. and to treat it accordingly. And I've always done that, mm-hmm. because of Mama.
That's right. And you did that. And so people would say, well, how in the heck did you get cancer? Because you were not one who, you're not a smoker. Well, at least I didn't read that anywhere that you were a smoker. You weren't big into drugs that I could tell.
Never.
You know, and it's like, where did this come from? You were a healthy, amazing woman. That's why you didn't have a doctor, because you had no need for one.
You know, it's really interesting because Mother always talked about comeuppance. And what she meant by that is life is going to smack us all in the face. Mm. It's always smacks us in the face. And I tell you, if life wanted to smack me, it couldn't have done anything more startling than punching me in the face with cancer because I was arrogantly healthy. No, I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. You know something? I didn't even have milkshakes. And heaven forbid if I ever had whipped cream on my milkshake or whipped cream and, you know, wow. Yeah, I was arrogantly healthy. Mm. I ate raw veggies and fresh veggies and our, you know, my salads and you know, fish and lean meat and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But guess what? In the final analysis, you just get cancer. Cancer is, it's a mystery. It's no one really understands cancer, just like no one really understands life. No one really understands the mysteries of God. Mm. It's all mystery. Mm-hmm.
But there's something about that mystery when it comes to God that you just puts a smile on your face and warms your heart inside and out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so for you, okay, so let's fast forward a little bit here. So you found out that you had cancer. You talked to Dale, you talked to the kids, and you began to explore options.
Yes, I was really lucky because that accelerated death benefit on my life insurance policy, which says if you got a terminal illness and you're going to die within 6 months, they send you a check for half of your insurance policy. Wow. I had a check within 3 weeks. That's how I had a check in my mailbox within 3 weeks on my accelerated death benefit on my insurance policy. It was that serious. So that opened up opportunities, financial. And by the way, you don't have to pay anything extra for that. So a word of wisdom to those out there with life insurance policies, make sure you have an accelerated death benefit rider because it sure comes in handy. Mm-hmm. So that gave me the means to, I got on a red eye. I had no appointments. I didn't have time to wait in line for 3 and 4 and 5 weeks to make appointments and see doctors. Right. I had to move, and I had to move fast. In San Diego, they were pretty much talking about palliative care already.
Yep.
And that's okay, but I just wasn't there yet.
Edie, for those listeners who don't know, what is palliative care?
Okay, palliative care is you're dying very fast, and they want to keep you comfortable. In other words, they're not really going to treat you.
Yes.
They're going to keep you comfortable,
right?
Which is okay. You know, some people choose that, but it wasn't the right thing for me because even though I accepted it, actually the acceptance fueled my will. It did not lessen. It strengthened my will. The acceptance did because I accepted it. I accepted the facts, and I knew what I had to do. So I got on a red-eye flight. I got on red-eye flights without appointments. I went to Sloan Kettering in New York City. I went to MD Anderson in Houston. And I went to Stanford Cancer Center, and that's where I found Dr. George Fisher. I didn't have an appointment. His administrative team was aghast that I showed up. By the way, I showed up there with my family. That was a few days after when they all came home. But I waited 4 hours to see him. I would have waited 4 days to see him. Wow. because he came in. He put his arms around my shoulders. First he gave a hug to my children. He gave a hug to Dale. He hugged me, and he kept his arm around my shoulder the entire time. And he was so honest, but he was so compassionate and caring. He said, Edie, I can't cure you, but I will treat you. Mm-hmm. And he said, I will treat you to the best of my ability. And he said something. He said, you won't hear me say the word palliative, because for me, I'm a doctor. I believe in treating. And this is someone who only treats stage 4 patients primarily.
Okay.
He's also had a clinical trials. And so he said, you know, you are as healthy as you're ever going to be. This is going to destroy you so quickly. So I want to hit you. I'm proposing one of the most aggressive chemo routines that we can do, treatment protocols. And this, I've had success with colon cancer and other cancers with this chemo cocktail. And that's how I'd like to treat you. And I mean, I would have done anything this man said, because I knew in my heart, I could see in the eyes of my family, they knew in their heart. We all knew instantaneously in our heart that Dr. George Fisher was our doctor and our doctor. It's a family kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he, by the way, he has done so much for other members of my family, not just me, in helping them deal with things because they can't control anything. I at least can control some of the stuff. I can try to control the diarrhea. I can try to control the nauseousness, the vomiting. I can try to control my emotions. I can try to control these things that are happening inside my body. But your family feels so powerless.
Yes.
And it's anticipated grief. It just devastates them emotionally. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fisher and my medical team helped us deal with all of that because mm-hmm. it was happening very fast.
What a special team.
Oh, amazing. I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed. And by the way, Christiane, I have no idea why I'm alive. And I will say that I'm lucky. I'm blessed. It's all of God's medicine. And God's medicine is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's doctors. It's your chemo. It's the sun. It's the smile of the stranger who catches your eye. It almost, just catches your eye. It's a hearing a bird sound in the distance. God is everywhere and in everything. And that's all of God's medicine. Mm. The biggest medicine, though, that I found for me was walking in the canyon, listening to gospel music. I always listen to gospel music when I walk in the canyon.
Mm. Yeah, how can you not? I mean, because then you can start singing and then everything is like, whoa.
Wow, think about it. Stand by me.
That's right.
You know, help me, Lord. You know, I've got confidence. I love Elvis singing gospel.
Yes.
Love Elvis singing gospel. And it's like, I know I look really weird sometimes in the canyon because I'm singing, you know, and sometimes I'll pass other people on the hiking trail and I have to be really careful because I don't want to appear that I'm, you know, a little messed up.
Surely not. But you know what? God always makes us a little crazy, right? Because there's something about it. When you have a joy, and I can just tell with you, Edie, you have this joy within you that's relentless. And I know you went through fear battles.
I still do. Terrified. I'm terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute sheer terror. Horror. Terror. Yeah. You know, don't get me wrong. It's like frozen in fear. And I'm talking about so afraid that you're overwhelmed with fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to deal with that, okay, and this is my favorite verse in the Bible, is when God told Job to pour out thy overflowings. Mm. Now, he was talking about anger. He was talking about some other emotions. But to me, God is telling me, and I every day pour out my overflowings. Dear Lord, help me pour out my overflowings. Be it fear, be it anger, mm-hmm. be it sadness, be it, you know, be it whatever it is, help me pour out those overflowings. Because when I pour out those overflowings, I feel with this grace. That's mm-hmm. how we feel with grace. Pour out the emotional overflowings and feel with spiritual grace, mm-hmm. at least for me.
Mm-hmm. That's something that all of us need to let sink in right there, exactly what you said. We need to pour it out so we can be filled up, because a
Absolutely.
Lot of us, we are so stuffed. And like you said earlier, we are so busy. We've got, I mean, you pulled over almost, I mean, trying to avoid traffic
yes.
when you got this news.
Yes.
But we live our lives like that all the time, 24/7.
That's why I walked. And that's why I walked 1,600 miles. Okay. Now, I didn't do that one time. I had two different walks. The first walk was 800 miles from San Diego to Sonoma. I had never walked more than 7 miles. Actually, that weekend was the weekend before I walked 7 miles. Before that, the most I'd ever walked was 4 miles. But, and I went out to do a little test walk, did 7 miles to see, you know, if I could get by the first day.
Yes.
And I knew I was going to walk one step at a time, one day at a time, and trust in God to decide how long and how far. And it took 55 days of walking, and I walked an average 15 miles a day. And by the way, this was less than 6 months after Stanford took out my right lung. And this was celebrating 6 years of anniversary of dealing with this and it coming back and having all these surgeries and missing all these body parts. I had almost a million milligrams of chemo, 79 treatments, and I was still alive. And I was vibrantly alive because I was filled with that joy you talked about. And so, but I knew I needed to heal physically, and, and I needed also to heal spiritually. I had to pour out, you know, the emotional ashes, if you will, scatter the emotional ashes. And no better way to do that than walking. So I started walking the old El Camino Real Mission Trail and following all those mission bells all the way up to 21 missions and lighting candles of thanksgiving and gratitude. And it took 55 days, walking on average 15 miles a day. And at the end, I had walked 800 miles. And when I got there, north of San Francisco to Sonoma, I didn't want to stop. That was the last mission of the old El Camino Real, the old California Mission Trail, but I didn't want to stop. And God answered a little, and I didn't even know it at the time, but flying above me were some geese, and they were flying south. And I had seen this last mission bell, and it said on it, Loretto, 1697. And I realized that the mission trail didn't start in San Diego. It started in Loretto, Mexico. Loretto, Mexico, 1,000 miles south of the border, used to be the capital of California. It was the capital of California, actually, for 4 years before they moved it to Monterey, California. And so the mission trail, where the missionary started to walk to California, they started in Loretto, Mexico. So as I saw those geese flying south and those hawks circling above me, and I saw this mission bell that said Loretto, 1697, I was so filled with joy, so filled with grace. I knew in my heart that I had to go to Loretto, Mexico, and start walking where the mission trail started. And I didn't know how or when. I didn't speak Spanish much. I didn't have any idea when. I didn't think about any of that. I just let that little seed float out there in the wind. And sure enough, cancer came back 2 years later. It came back in my remaining lung. I did that walk, the first walk, the 800 miles, in February of 2013. I started. I finished in April. In 2015, in February of 2015, almost exactly 2 years later, cancer came back in my remaining lung, in my left lung. That, again, was another wake-up call, another little smack, a gentle smack, because it was just one tumor instead of being, you know, exploding with tumors like I had for so many years. But so, yes, I had that. I knew I had to finish my mission walk. So, and I do things in between my 3 months at Stanford. After that was treated with radiation, they couldn't do surgery because it would take too much of lung tissue. I didn't have much lung tissue left. So we radiated it, radiated successfully. And I had an appointment at Stanford Cancer Center, and literally within 3 weeks, I crossed the border, got a flight to Loretto, there in Tijuana. And I had the promise of a vaquero for 5 days. A vaquero is a cowboy.
Okay.
For 5 days. And I had the promise of a pack mule, two pack mules, actually. One, a saddle mule and a pack mule for 10 days. That's the only promise, the only that I had. And so I went down to Loretto again by myself. And I knew it was going to be the wildest, craziest, most wonderful adventure of my life. And again, I didn't know if God wasn't going to allow this adventure to be a day adventure, a couple of hour adventure, or if it was going to be the 2 months that, that it would take me to go from the 800 miles, 1,000-mile zigzag, all the way to the California border. So it's a walk of faith. Every walk is a walk of faith. Every day is a walk of faith.
It is. And you say, and throughout your entire book, which of course you all want to pick up your own copy of The Mission Walker, it is extremely touching. It is, oh gosh, there are so many words I could use. At times it was almost revolting because how can cancer keep coming back? I mean, seriously, come on, enough is enough, God. Why won't you just let her be, either take her home or just heal her completely? He had obviously other reasons, but you will be touched. You will want to pick up your own copy of The Mission Walker. We will have that information in the show notes for you. Edie, when you were down in Mexico, because before on your 800 mile, the first one, you had kind of a team, like they would take shifts. You had some people that would walk with you, and you had one guy, I can remember, you found, I think it was a friend who came to drive up. Was it Q? Oh, I can't remember. Let me look.
Dead Dolly came up.
Yeah.
Oklahoma. Yes. To drive the van. I had a friend, Ron Graham, who had this van, this camper van, and he had loaned this camper van for me for 3 or 4 years when I was really in the throes of chemo and all this other stuff, because I had treatment every 3 weeks. I had chemo rounds every 3 weeks, and I had to do something in between just to save my soul, to save my spirit. Yeah. And so a lot of times what I do is I take Ron Graham's camper van, my husband and I, and we just take off. And we'd take off for 3 weeks, and we'd just put a GPS on a scenic bypass. And we'd go to these national parks, and we'd go to these wonderful places and try to just get away from the cancer and also to heal physically and spiritually and emotionally between this onslaught of fighting. And yeah, so he had loaned me this camper van, and he agreed to loan me this camper van for 2 months. And a friend from Oklahoma, a spiritually mature person, Deb Dolly, who just taught me so much. She came from Oklahoma and drove the camper van. And yes, I had people walk with me some days not. Yes, it was kind of a spontaneous thing. Again, walks, especially long walks, life, we walk alone together.
Yes. Yeah. We do. We walk alone together. And the camper, which I thought was very interesting, the plate was Q random.
Q random, yes.
And I love that because I thought, God doesn't work in randomness. We sometimes see that as like we say that it's, you know, coincidental or, oh, it just happened or it was by luck. But here you have this nice little camper and your whole team, and it wasn't by random, yet it was called Q Random. So I thought that was interesting.
Can I mention something about Christine?
Sure.
Because Ron Graham is a famous mathematician. He's a computer scientist emeritus at the University of California. And he was raised in a poor family. They moved around a lot. His father was a worker in Taft, California. So they didn't even know he was a genius until he was like 12 or 13 years old. And he had graduated from college by the time he was 15. Mm-hmm. But he's just a renowned Ronald Graham, one of the premier mathematicians in the world. And this is a mathematical theorem. Now, he's not religious, and he's very private, so I'm not even sure what his spiritual inclination is. Mm-hmm. But his theorem, he's a mathematician, and that's his theorem, Q random. And I explained this in the book as best I could, but it's that, yes, what you just said, he has proven, or not proven, but he has a mathematical theorem on Q random that says that nothing is random. Everything is, there's interconnectedness between all events. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is spirit. To me, that is mystery. To me, that is God.
Yes.
Now, it may not be to a scientist like Ron. I don't know what's mm-hmm. in his heart. But just the fact that he, with his wonderful brain, his wonderful mind, conceived that mathematical theorem, to me, that was a miracle.
Yes, yes. Yes, and that's what I took away from it. Edie, it was like, oh my gosh, I mean, to see all of this together, of course, you're in it. Now, walking, I got to tell you, I'm a big walker too. I love to do about 7 to 11 miles a day. So I love the walking too. I'm right there with you. There's something about when I was reading your story, I'm like, there is connectedness. And when you're out there and you take time to breathe, you begin to connect the dots. But sometimes when we're all stuffed up and we miss those bells, we miss what's right in front of us.
Oh, totally. We don't see mission bells. Mm-hmm. We have probably 500 or 600 mission bells along the Highway 101. It doesn't run exactly according to the El Camino Real, but they put it where people see them, not necessarily on the actual road itself,
right?
The old trail itself. But people don't even see them. There are almost 1,000 of these bells, and people don't even see them because we're driving by so fast. But walking, and I think you'll agree with this, Christiane, since you love to walk, it slows life down.
Yes.
And we connect. And as I was walking down Mission Trail, not only did I connect with what was happening in front of me real time, and you have to become L-eyed. I mean, my gosh, you can be hit by a car at any point in time. Motorcycles, bicycles, 18-wheelers, you know, knocking you off the road. You're in the mountains alone with bears and mountain lions and all those other things. So you have to just be...
Rattlesnakes?
Rattlesnakes, yes. totally in the now. But what that does is that opens you up to enormous insight. Enormous insight. Not only did it heal my lung that had just been removed, my body, but it healed my spirit and slowed me down. Mm. And what can I say other than it was transcendent.
Mm.
It was transcendent. Mm-hmm. Walking and how in the world can you walk hundreds of miles and be transcendent? That's part of the mystery of it. The more you walk, the more you connect.
Mm-hmm.
There were days when I really, I know it sounds like hyperbole, but really every day I felt born again out there.
Mm-hmm.
My body, my physical body, every day was being transformed. And isn't that really a rebirth?
That is, yes. Yeah. And that's what God wants us to experience in everyday life. I mean, when we wake up, when we lay down, our body is to detoxify. It's to get rid of. It's built that way. And a lot of us need help in that sleeping area anyway. We all could use more sleep, but we don't make it a priority. Well, if we would begin to make some of our foundational things a priority, like you did with walking. I mean, walking is so, I mean, call it primal. We're made to walk. That's how God created us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he really opens us up to some of that mystery when we're walking, because movement is what we're meant to do. Mm-hmm. And yes, we're meant to move spiritually. We're meant to move emotionally. Mm-hmm. We're meant to move physically. And it's all interconnected.
Mm-hmm. You said in your book, if I can move, I'm alive. Or
I'm not
sick. I'm not dead. I'm not sick. That's right. Thank you. Yes.
I can move. I'm not sick. Mm-hmm. I realized that truth within days of being diagnosed with stage 4 incurable cancer. Mm. I realized if I can move, I'm not sick. And I realized that reading Lance Armstrong's book, it's not about the bike. And yes, if I can move, I'm not sick. Mm-hmm. And so that I started moving. I started walking. Well, I've always walked. I've always moved. But that took on new meaning.
Yes.
And I knew that God was going to slow me down. And God was going to slow me down to the point that some days I could hardly move to get out of bed.
Mm.
But that's okay. I could still get out of bed if God was willing. I knew that some days that God would allow me the energy to walk around the block. And then I knew that some days that God would allow me the energy and the will to walk a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how life is. That's how walking is, which I think is a metaphor for life, is we just start out and God decides how long and how far.
Mm. That is so beautiful. So you're walking on the second half of your life.
Yes.
Of this craziness. You've already had now 2 fights with cancer because you had the first diagnosis, then it came back. And now you've decided after that, in between that 3-month wait, right, if I remember correctly, that now you're doing the Mexico area of the trail, correct?
Actually, what had happened, I'd had 4 surgeries by then. I skip over a lot of stuff in the book because it's not an illness narrative.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to make it completely an illness narrative. So I skipped over a lot of that. In fact, most of the book is that last half, which is all Mexico.
Yes.
Because that was such an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so cancer had, I had 4 surgeries by then. I'd had liver surgery, which had taken the gallbladder and radical abdominal surgery. Mm-hmm. I had had lung surgery where I had lost my right lung. I'd had colon and stomach surgery where 10 inches of my colon and 2 inches of my stomach had been removed. And then 6 months before I went down to Mexico, I had throat surgery because I had some lesions on my thyroid and my parathyroid glands, which regulate your entire metabolism and your calcium and all that other stuff. It was going haywire. And so actually the same surgeon that opened me up and did the liver surgery was also one of the best parathyroid surgeons in the country, Dr. Jeffrey Norton at Stanford Cancer Center. So he had opened up my throat and had done some pretty major surgery in my throat 6 months before I went down to Mexico.
Wow. And you still went?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Didn't hesitate. Although I tell you, there were times on those mules when I was just being jostled and actually hanging on for dear life, being in the Sierras. There's 6 Sierras down there, these mountains. Uh-huh. And of course, it's that one of the hottest deserts in the world. It's part of the Sonoran Desert. And it's like, it's so brutal. It's physically so brutal. Number one, it got my mind completely off cancer. Mm. Totally off cancer.
For sure.
It was wonderful. And actually, it was so brutal on the outside of my body, with the cactus and you know, the rattlesnakes and all that other stuff. You know, just the terror of all those physical things.
Yes.
But it got my mind up, and it taught me, I think, what God was trying to teach me down there is that He has given us the power within to control fear. We have the power within to control fear. And I've never been able to do that, Christiane. I've never been able to control that terror. I haven't been able to control that fear in 8 years of dealing with it and dealing with it with the cancer. Even in that 800-mile walk all the way, you know, from San Diego to Sonoma, the fear was still there. But when I went down to Mexico and finished in that brutal environment, something happened to me. Something happened to me. I lost my fear of fear.
Mm. Wow.
I lost fear. Pour out thy overflowings, God told Job. Pour out thy overflowings. And I think God realized it was going to take something pretty darn radical for me to pour out my overflowings of fear. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time. I'm just now reflecting on it, actually. And I think it took a brutal walk. It took that walk to pour out that overflowings of fear. Mm.
What a blessing in the midst of tragedy.
Yes. And by the way, one thing about the book I'll just mention really quickly. Is the way it came about is I'd written an article 3 weeks before I left for Mexico. I wrote this really quick article. I sent it to the Wall Street Journal, and they published it. It was called The Walker and the Saint, and I was just amazing, you know. And they almost published a whole page, and someone had seen that and said, you know, this would make an interesting book. And I didn't. The furthest thing from my mind was writing a book. I mean, I'm still, you know, dealing with cancer and all this other stuff. And so, and I had this calling, if you will, to finish the mission walk. And so, but 3 weeks before I went down to Mexico, this person called me and said, you know, Edie, I'd like to see if anyone's interested in a book deal. He was an agent in Los Angeles. And I said, I said, yeah, that would be great. Goodbye. I'm going to Mexico. So it came to pass that, HarperCollins, Thomas Nelson, liked this whole idea. And so the publisher, W Publishing, which is an imprint of Thomas Nelson and HarperCollins, Matt Bauer at W Publishing called me and he said, Edie, we want you to do a book for us. And I said, my gosh, I said, Matt, what kind of book do you want? I said, do you want an illness narrative? I said, do you want a spiritual book? I said, do you want a historical narrative? Do you want a crazy Indiana Jones Wild West adventure? I said, you know, what kind of a book do you want? And you know what he said, Christiane?
What? And it's, yes, it is all.
And he said, I want it in 3 months. This was in May of last year.
Oh, my goodness.
May 24th of last year. He said, I want it in 3 months. Can you deliver a 70,000-word manuscript to me by the end of August?
Wow.
Well, that was good timing because I was in between my cancer appointments, my oncology treatments at Stanford. I'd just been there the 1st of May, the end of April, and I had to go back in September. So I said, sure, I guess. So I had my husband take me to the desert to Palm Springs to rented a little bitty casita. It's 124 degrees outside. We loaded up with stuff in the refrigerator and the pantry from Costco. And then my husband left me. And I used Amazon Fresh to deliver my fresh milk and my fresh veggies, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Because 120 degrees outside, I don't have a car.
Right.
But every single day, for 90 days, for 3 months, every single day, I wrote. And I wrote, and I wrote, just like walking. You know, you think, I can't walk 800 miles. Mm-hmm. No, you might. Well, just go out. It's one step at a time, one day at a time. And writing a book is one word at a time, one paragraph, one page, one day at a time. And I read something by Stephen King, and Stephen King said, if you can't write it in 60 days, it's not worth reading.
Oh.
And that's what he said. Mm-hmm. In fact, he said, you write it in 60 days, but then you take 6 months editing it and tightening it up and making it readable, actually.
Yeah.
And so basically, I had such an amazing team there at W Publishing at Thomas Nelson that helped me once I gave them the manuscript. And I was working with this wonderful lady in Palo Alto. Her name was Cindy Tiberio. She was absolutely fantastic because I would write and I'd send it to Cindy. I'd write and send it to Cindy. Well, it was 6 weeks. I started with the Mexico piece first.
Oh.
And it was 6 weeks, and I hadn't even finished Mexico. And Cindy said, Edie, get out of Mexico. Get out of Mexico. You're never going to be able to do this, finish this book. And I couldn't. You know, it's like walking has its own rhythm.
Yes.
And writing has its own rhythm. I said, Cindy, I can't get out of Mexico until I told the whole story. And so lucky for me, I kept throwing things to her, and she was, you know, she'd tell me, well, you know, this is unclear and do this and do that. She was absolutely wonderful to work with. And so, I got it done. And then I had like 3 weeks to write the rest. Well, I'd already written a lot of the upfront about the cancer journey a couple of years before, trying to deal with what was coming back in my lung and everything. Mm. So I had some pieces written. And so, we put it all together. And I had 90,000 words to send to HarperCollins at the end of that 3 months.
Ah.
But, and then they edited it down and tightened it up. And I think they did a good job. Don't you think so, Christiane?
Oh, I do think so. Because everybody's going to want to pick up their own copy of The Mission Walker. We will have the link in the show notes for you. You will want to hear and read the incredible story, the entire story, from the rattlesnakes to even when they were on the side of the road with the broken down truck and the guys, and you're trying to load up the mules and all of this stuff. It just, yeah. You were hiding behind the bumper underneath.
Yes. One of the problems in Mexico, and this is a tragedy, it's absolute tragedy, are the drug smugglers. They call them narcos in Mexico. Mm-hmm. They're drug smugglers. And there's nothing to me more evil than drugs and what it does to societies, whole communities.
Yes.
I was so blessed because had I found myself in the wrong place at the wrong time, I don't know what would have happened to me. Because those old arroyos and those old trails through Mexico are really the smuggling trails are where the narcos are. And we had several different situations with the vaqueros. Actually, I had a vaquero. We had a difficult situation, and he got a little frightened, and he actually left me. But that was okay because the next morning another vaquero showed up to continue my trek north towards the California border. Mm-hmm. But, I tell you the truth. None of that scared me. None of it. After dealing with stage 4 cancer, narcos don't scare you. Now, had a narco been pointing a gun in my face, I would have been terrified.
Yes.
I would probably died of a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that cancer helps you deal with is anticipatory grief. You learn to control and not give in to anticipatory grief. Mm. If you're going to give in to grief, give in to real grief. And try not to give in to anticipatory fear. And isn't that what all fear is, anticipatory fear?
Yes.
It's the fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always what's happening right now, although that can be very terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's not as terrifying as that the darkness of our minds can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all those things I learned out on the old California Mission Trail, that 1,600-mile mission trail from Loreto, Mexico to Sonoma, California. God taught me how to pour out my overflowings of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that by putting me in the most amazingly fearful, terrifying situations that imaginable, except I've never been on a battlefield, and I hope never to be. Mm-hmm. But
you fought your own battle already.
And you know, we never know how we're going to react. Like, I don't know how I'm going to react this afternoon if I am in a fearful situation. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Because one thing cancer's also taught me is you think you know what to expect. You think you're prepared for what you expect. You're never prepared for what you expect, mm-hmm. ever. And we never know until that very moment in time how we're going to react. Mm-hmm. And and this is how I ended the book. And you know, that all is well is a theme in the book, all is well.
Yes.
And I think if God is whispering anything to us, and he does, he whispers, every second of every day, we're recipients of God's whispers. But God is saying to us, all is well. Regardless of what is happening, all is well. And another mission walker taught me that. A dear friend, Joyce Blue Summers, taught me that on a mission walk. All is well. And I called upon that strength when I was walking in some of the very difficult situations. Because Joyce said, Edie, if you say and you pray to God and you hear God, God will whisper to you, all is well. And just say that, all is well, and all will be well. And that is so true, Christiane.
It is so true. And it's so beautiful. Your story, your life is absolutely beautiful inside and out.
Thank you, Christiane. Every life is.
Yes.
Every life is. Mm-hmm. That is the present that God has given us. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love walking, is because walking allows me to unwrap that present very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. For the person who's sitting there struggling right now, going, well, you're fine. You got through cancer, even though it was horrible, you know. So wait, but I'm stuck in, this is where I'm at. And I'm in the mess. What would you tell that person as to their steps, the first step to begin to get out of that mess? What advice would you give them?
That is an enormously... enormously good question, Christiane. You know, I think that when life hits us with a curveball, mm-hmm. just, it's okay. Let it stun you. Let it knock you down. Just don't let it knock you out. Mm-hmm. And pray to the Lord for help to pick yourself up. And every day I try to pray to God to hear what God wants me to do. And even in the times of struggle, and by the way, you can die and still be healed. God can still heal you and you can die. Mm. And all is well.
Yes.
All is well. Mm-hmm. But you know, when the person is, when there's mud and the mud needs to settle, and, you know, everyone, all the wisdom teachers throughout the world, Confucius, Buddha, you know, all of the prophets in the Old Testament, you see it in Ecclesiastes, you see it in Proverbs, you see it in Psalm over and over and over again, mm-hmm. is, and of course, the message of Jesus going into the wilderness and settling what Jesus had to settle in the wilderness, right. is that we're all going to be slapped in the face, mm-hmm. okay? We're all going to be tempted to despair. We're all going to be tempted to turn away from God. We're all going to be tempted to give in, mm-hmm. whether that evil is cancer, whether that evil is drugs, whether that evil is another person. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes we have to just trust in God to get us through it.
Mm-hmm. And you've done that.
I keep doing it every hour of every day. Honest, I have two prayers. I start the day and I end the day. I start the day every day. My prayer is, thank you, dear Lord, thank you. And I end the day as I'm falling to sleep is, dear Lord, please have mercy on me.
Mm. How beautiful. You are truly a mission walker, and I think everybody's going to just be going, I mean, I'm already tearing up. You are just such an inspiration, and God obviously said, I'm not finished with you yet, Edie. I've got something bigger planned, and your mama was right when she said, you only have one life. Mama always said, don't waste it. And you have never wasted your life.
Well, I have, Christiane, but thank goodness, we have second chances. Thank goodness for second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth chances.
That's true.
I think that's part of the beauty of being human. Yes. Is you know, God didn't make us perfect. He gives us lots of chances. And had he made us perfect, I mean, we wouldn't need him, would we? And actually, it's
we'd be bored.
The most imperfect. Woo! You know, it's when we're actually wasted.
Yes.
That we need them the most. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That we need them the most. And I think sometimes Jesus has to fling us into the gutter.
Yeah.
In order for us to pick ourselves up out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of Philippians is one of my very, very favorite, is suffering. And it's, you know, suffering produces courage. Courage produces endurance. Endurance produces hope, and hope will never disappoint us.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Hope, faith, God,
mm-hmm.
our Lord Jesus Christ.
Amen, sister. Woo, I'm ready to get walking. I'm just saying, can we start today? Can you and I just go on a walk right now? I'll jump on a light eye. I don't know what the late red eye, because red eye is early, but regardless, the late night one, we could get up in the morning, right? Surely. Well, as we begin to wrap up, Edie, I know people are going to want to connect with you. Where can they find you?
I have a Facebook page called The Mission Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And please connect with me on the Facebook page, The Mission Walker.
Okay.
And connect with me. And if you are ever in California and you're riding, you're in a car and you see some person that looks like a homeless person that's walking, but they look deliriously happy and they may be singing gospel and it's Elvis gospel, they can connect with me there because it's me.
Amen. I love that. You keep singing your gospel. Edie, though, before I let you go, I have one final question for you. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
My story reconnected me with my mother and my father.
Mm.
And the strength that they gave me and the blessings they gave me being raised in a sincerely beautiful Christian home. And those roots that they provided me at a very early age that I really was not appreciative of or even conscious of,
mm-hmm.
you know, are really what has saved my life. Mm-hmm. My mother and my father had been dead for years, and yet their faith saved my life.
Mm. Wow. Wow. What a blessing. And I know your mom and dad are looking down at you, your brother even.
Ooh. Yes. Yes, for sure.
All of them. Oh, you know, Edie, I hope that we can connect again because I sure have enjoyed our time here today. You are truly a gem. And I wouldn't call you a diamond in the rough. God is making you more than a diamond.
Why, thank you, Christiane. It's been an absolute delight speaking with you. And I hope someday to have the pleasure of walking with you.
Amen. I will be there.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.